Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast.
And Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. Hit us up on the CNG call-in line, 888-SAY-ESPN. That's 888-729-3776. And Gojo, we were on the show yesterday when the news of Brian Flores' class action lawsuit against the NFL and three other clubs broke. And just our initial reactions was shock. But then it gave way to the feelings of an obvious disparity when it comes to hiring black coaching candidates as head coaches as opposed to their white counterparts. It's something that's obvious across the NFL. It's something that players and coaches understand. And I think at this point, media members and fan bases understand as well. Yet, we can't find the right mechanism to get these things fixed. The Rooney Rule is in place in order to try to create a more equitable playing field when it comes to the hiring process. But it's clear that it's failed in its objective. And right now we're discussing the Giants potentially violating the spirit of the rule when it comes to the Rooney Rule and hiring, based on the allegations from Brian Flores, Brian Daboll, before they did their final interview with Brian Flores.
Yeah, Chris, it really has been that wide range of reactions. But most of it, I think, especially with this, comes back to pain. You and I both talked about Brian Flores. He appeared on Get Up. He was on CBS this morning. And all of it seemed to come back to a coach who, in this situation, appears to just be burning down everything around him right now because of that pain of seeing and writing in the text messages from Bill Belichick that were allegedly meant for Brian Daboll, congratulating on him getting that Giants job days before he was supposed to interview himself. That's got to hurt in a way that, Chris, for all the talk about this and the way it's always been perceived, the NFL's issue with minority hiring at the head coaching position, to see it in writing still, I think after all that has to probably hit different, right?
No doubt about it. And as somebody that was a part of the NFL for over a decade, it hurts to see that somebody that has proven themselves, that has risen through the ranks and has had an opportunity to have the title of head coach, to be successful down in Miami, two of his three seasons down there were winning seasons, to be fired the way that he was, and then to not have an opportunity in this hiring cycle to actually interview for a job in his hometown with the New York Giants and have that be a fair process, allegedly. That's the part that hurts me the most, because you think that the National Football League is a meritocracy. As a player, you're told that if you're good enough, if you put it out there on tape, then you're going to have job security, you're going to have more opportunities, and you're going to be able to monetize that. It doesn't seem like that's the case with Brian Flores, because he's proven himself to be a quality candidate, and yet he's having to go through these lengths in order to balance the scale. So it's an embarrassment for the league, no matter what comes of this lawsuit that he's filed. And certainly it's a black eye toward the Rooney Rule and everything that it was intended to do.
Now, this was Brian Flores this morning on Get Up, talking about the changes he wanted to see coming from this lawsuit, particularly with the decision makers, the NFL owners.
I would like to see the hearts and minds, I want the hearts and minds of the people making those decisions to change in a way where they want to or have a feeling to hire someone of color. That they can relate to that person, that they can build a relationship with that person. Because I think that's a little bit of the issue. The familiarity isn't there. And I think we need to open up a little bit more, and there's an opportunity for that.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. For more on that, let's head out to the hotline to talk to ESPN senior NFL writer and does a great job writing over at The Undefeated. Jason Reed joins us now. And Jason, you wrote an article on The Undefeated about this lawsuit and the light it shines on the NFL's hiring practices. Apparently, we just lost Jason. We're going to try and get him back here because, Chris, hearing that from Brian Flores wanting to change the hearts and minds of the owner, you and I both know that's not going to happen without the threat of force in all of this. And the one spot, as we talk to Amber Wilson and all the rest of our legal folks around here, that seems to actually have a space where legally there may be some threat of force is with Jeffrey Ross, the owner of the Miami Dolphins, and the accusations and the allegations in this lawsuit that he was trying to pay Brian Flores to lose games. That seems like competitive integrity enough. And in a day and age where sports gambling is as profitable as it is and as popular as it is, that seems like a spot where this could all go. Let's go back. I think we've got Jason there now. Jason, you with us? Jason, we got you?
I'm here.
All right, awesome. Jason Reed with us on the Goodyear Hotline, ESPN, and senior writer at The Undefeated. Jason, we've been talking about the Brian Flores lawsuit all day. We just played the sound of him saying through all of this he'd like to see the hearts and minds of the decision makers in the NFL changed. You've been around and talked to a lot of coaches who have felt this way a long time. Based on what you've seen from this, how realistic do you think that goal is?
I mean, the goal of trying to change hearts and minds, I think it's admirable what Flo was saying, but I'm not convinced at this point that anything that happens with this situation is going to change hearts and minds. Now, can it change policies? I think that that's a more realistic aspiration at this point, even though, to be quite honest about it, I don't know if that's going to happen either. At this point, what we know is that Brian Flores was willing to risk his career. Let me take that back. Brian Flores has ended his career in an attempt to effect substantive change in the NFL with regard to hiring, and I think that's admirable. Whether or not he succeeds, we still have a long way to go to find that out.
Jason, we haven't heard from D'Amara Smith in the NFLPA. We haven't heard from any active head coaches when it comes to their reaction to the lawsuit filed by Brian Flores. What's the overall sense you get on how current players and coaches feel about the actions taken by Brian Flores and his legal team toward the NFL?
Well, I got to break this up into two categories, public and private. Like, in terms of private, I've had many conversations with coaches, a few players, mostly coaches, back and forth communication through text and then phone calls. And privately, everyone I've spoken with has commended Brian Flores for what he's done, for what he's willing to risk to go out there to try to bring more light into this situation. And privately, I've gotten many people who have told me that, hey, you know, we support him. We hope this, you know, is effective and that it works. Publicly, people are very reluctant to go out there and say things in praising him, especially people who are currently involved with the game, because if you're still involved with the game, you're in a situation where you don't want to risk ending your career. You don't want to risk reprisal. And clearly, that's something that's on everybody's mind. So privately, he's being praised, at least by black coaches in the NFL, by some players who I've spoken with, but publicly, everybody's like, boy, this is a tough situation.
You mentioned, Jason, some of the policy that may be able to be affected by this, the pressure coming publicly here. Chris has referenced this a bunch on the show. When he came into the league in the early 2000s, there were six black head coaches, and now we have one remaining in Mike Tomlin. Does it feel like the situation around this has gotten worse?
Well, the NFL at its high point had eight black head coaches, and I believe the number was seven black GMs. I write about this all the time, so I should remember it off the top of my head, but I think the numbers were eight and seven. Clearly, we're at a point right now where things are not moving in the right direction. Mike Tomlin's the only black head coach. Now, the league office will point to the fact that there are more general managers. Two general managers were hired this year. There were some gains made last year. So that is true that there are improvements there. But in terms of coaches, no, we're definitely at a much worse place than, I should say, the league is at a much worse place than it was a few years ago. And here's the thing, guys. There were nine head coaches are going to be hired in this hiring cycle. So far, the four jobs filled have all been filled by white coaches. And there is a fear among people I've talked to in the league that the league is going to go 9-for-9 this year, meaning nine openings, nine white guys hired. And that's a real problem. It's a real problem, not just for the optics of Brian Flores' lawsuit, but because the league office has made it clear it's striving to improve the numbers around diversity and inclusion, and this is not improvement.
Jason, we saw with the fallout from the Washington football team, now the Washington Commanders, around their investigation, pressure from a House Oversight Committee on what was happening there and the pressuring of the NFL to release the correspondence, the documents that it had gathered. Is there the potential to see similar pressure from the federal government or any government agency in this situation surrounding the allegations made by Brian Flores in this class action suit?
Well, I mean, there are a lot of hurdles before this suit actually ever sees the inside of a courtroom. In terms of the federal government, lawmakers, politicians like football too, and the NFL is king. And we, you know, everybody involved in this conversation right now on the phone and you guys in the studio, you guys know that. The NFL is scandal-proof. The NFL is recession-proof. I honestly do not see a federal situation in terms of the government and politicians coming in and, you know, mandating that the NFL has to have a certain number of black coaches or a certain number of black GMs or player personnel directors or scouting directors. I just don't see that happening. So it's really going to come down to the NFL owners, the 32 people who own these kingdoms within the league, I believe, to really just say, okay, we have to do the right thing now. So I don't see external pressure really working.
Lots of tentacles to this that we are no doubt just getting started with. Jason, we appreciate you giving us some time and some insight on this subject. Thank you so much, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Anytime, guys.
Jason Reed, ESPN senior NFL writer and writer over at the Undefeated. Piece up now. Brian Flores' lawsuit shines a brutal light on the NFL's hiring practices. Make sure you check that out. But coming up next, we will talk about one of the teams at the heart of this who has not filled their head coaching vacancy. Maybe the most radioactive job in pro sports, next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Mike Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. Get at us on the CNG Twitter line at Mike Golic Jr. and at Chris Canty 99. And Gojo, we got the explosive allegations from Brian Flores in his class action lawsuit against the NFL and three teams from yesterday afternoon, but now we also have former NFL head coach and now current Grambling State University head coach Hugh Jackson coming on the record and saying that he had a similar situation with the Cleveland Browns in 2016 and 2017, where he was encouraged by owner Jimmy Haslam and Sashi Brown and Paul DePodesta to engage in tanking and losing games in order to improve draft position, and he was offered monetary compensation for that. Now, these are still allegations. None of this stuff has been proven in a court of law. But nonetheless, we do have another black head coach saying that he was asked to do a similar thing with a program that was trying to get its fortunes turned around. And it seems like there is a pattern of behavior that's unbecoming of front offices or NFL owners at play.
Yeah, the Browns, spokesperson of the Browns have already come out and said, quote, this charge, they called it completely fabricated, and said that any accusation that any member of our organization was incentivized to deliberately lose games is categorically false. Chris, the part that jumped out to me in this report, and these were from ESPN's Jake Trotter, attributed to a text message from Hugh Jackson, they claimed that their proof was well documented and, quote, had been presented to the league. So, Chris, at least in this instance, we have something that they're claiming, hey, we already showed the NFL and tried to tell them this was going on. And that, to me, is another layer in all this as we talk about what response we expect to see from the league at some point to this.
No doubt about it. And if it is true, if these reports are indeed fact and they were sent to the NFL league office, then Roger Goodell has a bigger problem on his hands, because we're talking about protecting the integrity of the game and protecting the competitive balance, not to mention the implications that would reach to the NFL owners, because a lot of these owners have interest in sports gambling startups and sports gambling entities. And to be a part of a scheme or a league where the competitive balance is upset and the integrity of the game is not protected, well, then there's got to be some action behind it. There's got to be some type of criminality in all of it. So again, all of this stuff is just allegations. But if any of this is true, Gojo, especially the allegations that the coaches were asked to tank and lose games, then that could potentially present a liability issue for the National Football League. And a lot of people have engaged in the NFL because of the emergence of sports gambling, the evolution of it, being able to bet online through the apps and all of those different things. With people questioning the integrity of the product that they're betting on, that can't be a good place to be if you're the NFL. And beyond that, the criminality, the potential criminality of all of it as well, is another issue that could be on the forefront of the minds of all of these NFL clubs.
Ken Engel Jr. here on ESPN Radio. And Chris, then you have just the sheer optics of this as well, pertaining to the conversation we're having about the NFL and its poor practices when it comes to minority hiring at the head coaching positions. Because now you've got two former head coaches, both black men, coming out and saying, we were paid to lose. And then furthermore, that's the allegation in all of this, Chris. Think about what also happened in both instances here. Hugh Jackson, a part of all that losing, ends up getting fired for that reason, because he lost so much here. Brian Flores, in this situation, does more winning than expected in this spot and gets fired. None of that is going to be a glowing rendition or a glowing review of what this is supposed to be about, and especially the difficulties that black men face being hired in these positions. Looking at both of those examples, saying what's going to be good enough in this spot when we are asked to do one thing, and in one case, it happens and the Browns do lose and Hugh Jackson is fired. And then in another case, Brian Flores outperforms any expectation for that even before we get to the tanking element, and he's now shown the door.
No, you're right, Mike. And the other part of this too is coaches, if they are hired, don't get the same runway when it comes to being able to turn around the programs. Look at what happened with Steve Wilks with the Arizona Cardinals. You're talking about him being one and done. Now, I get it. The Cardinals have turned themselves around over the course of the last three seasons under Cliff Kingsbury. But who's to say that Steve Wilks wouldn't have had the opportunity or the potential to do the same exact thing that we've seen in terms of resurrecting that program? I guess the whole point of it is fair and equitable opportunities and hiring practices, and then being treated similarly to their white counterparts when they're in these roles. And clearly it's a no in both instances when it comes to how the NFL treats black coaches.
Yeah, it would basically be a message. If the question is what's good enough, the answer, based on what we've seen in the allegations from Brian Flores and now from Hugh Jackson, who, again, the former Browns head coach, alleging that he was also offered money in exchange for losing games to help a tanking system in that organization, the answer to that would be apparently nothing is good enough to keep that job. That is going to be the optics of what the NFL's now got on its hands. We'll continue to see if more coaches come forward and echo this. We heard that from Brian Flores' legal team on Get Up this morning, and we will try and see just that. Coming up next, let's take a look at another case right now as we talk about this current hiring cycle of one of the coaches in the college ranks that's gotten a lot of buzz lately. What's the legacy of Jim Harbaugh at his alma mater at Michigan if he does in fact leave for the NFL during this round? We'll get to that here after this word from Bank of America. All right, guys, it's game day, and you're ready to go all out. So you ordered the essentials to make it a success, like a jersey, a power recliner, and a bigger screen. And you used your Bank of America customized cash rewards credit card, choosing to earn 3% cash back on online shopping. Rewards that put you toward an essential piece of the celebration, an air horn. Apply for yours at bankofamerica.com/more rewarding. Copyright 2022 Bank of America Corporation. Back after this, Candy and Golick Jr., ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Golick Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golick Jr. and Chris Candy. We're trying to do a radio show, but we're caught up watching the Senior Bowl practices on ESPN2, and right now they're doing one-on-one pass rush between offensive linemen and defensive linemen. So Gojo and I are breaking down the techniques that both sides are using and trying to figure out who's going to be the next latest and greatest coming into the NFL ranks.
I'm just saying, Chris, I think next year they need to send us down to the Senior Bowl just to do commentary on O-line, D-line, one-on-one, right? We got one-on-one pass rush going on right now. We live in the glory days. I mean, they were a lot more glorious for you, because I'd imagine you were better at one-on-one pass rush than I was at one-on-one pass blocking. It's a drill that skews in favor of the D-line, but I digress on that.
There you go. There you go.
It's unrealistic.
Listen, man, whether you're an offensive lineman or defensive lineman, if you win your one-on-ones in the NFL, they usually let you stick around longer than not. I'm just just saying. I'm just saying.
You can't do it on the field always, but if you got it in one-on-ones, man, you can get these checks.
Oh, yeah, they'll give you plenty of runway. Even if you can't do it in the game, if you always do it in one-on-one pass rush, they'll give you opportunities to see if you can come around and actually do it when it matters. But we digress. We got to get back to sports. And in doing so, Gojo, we got to talk about the interview that surprised everybody, which was Jim Harbaugh, head coach of Michigan football, taking the interview with the Minnesota Vikings, who have a new general manager in Kwesi Adofo-Mensah. And this was one of those things that popped up earlier this weekend, and now the in-person interview was set for today. And so just based on the potential for Jim Harbaugh to come back to the NFL, I think that's a story in and of itself. But Gojo, if in fact he does leave Michigan, what will be his legacy with the Wolverines as a head coach?
Yeah, Chris, you know these things are rarely ever judged fairly, right? You always hear me say a fair is a place where they judge pigs. So that's not how this goes. It should be a success. Like, modern college football for a lot of traditional blue bloods is going to be about a bit of soul searching. I can say this as someone who was at a place like Notre Dame, who has been one of the traditionally greatest college programs, usually one of the winningest of all time, but as of recent has seen that ceiling around the national championship and around the playoff and had to kind of reckon with that. Chris, for Jim Harbaugh, what he has done in his first four seasons at Michigan, he had three 10-win seasons. This past year, after the 2-4 pandemic season, responded with his best year as a Michigan head coach, beat Ohio State finally, made it to the college football playoffs, won the Big Ten. Chris, all of that is a success. In modern college football, if you get your team to the dance, manage to win your conference, and are getting to double-digit wins, you're getting close enough. But we know for Michigan that's going to be a lot more complicated because you didn't beat that team in Ohio State nearly often enough for people's liking.
I hear you on that one, but to that, I would rebut with, what the hell were you before Jim Harbaugh got there? In the 7 years that you had Brady Hoke and Rich Rodriguez, you had a grand total of one double-digit win season and four bowl appearances, of which you lost three of them. I don't understand exactly what Michigan fans expected. This was a rebuild. Even though you have the luster, you have a story program, the state of affairs when it came to Michigan football was one that had fell out of relevance in the national landscape. And so Jim Harbaugh gave you that sizzle when he left the 49ers and decided that he was going to come back to the college ranks and be the head coach of Michigan. Now, listen, he got fired at the 49ers. It wasn't because of a lack of production. It was because he didn't get along with Trent Baalke. And we could see in the NFL, Trent Baalke has his own issues. But I digress. Looking at Jim Harbaugh, it's not as if he doesn't know how to coach football. And the way that Michigan treated him in the last couple of seasons before this past year is probably the reason why Jim Harbaugh was looking at other alternatives, other opportunities where he might have a longer runway, where he might feel more appreciated, because it was clear when they asked him to take a pay cut that he was on thin ice when it came to his alma mater and being a head coach at Michigan football. And so after this season, why not capitalize on the successes that you had in getting Michigan to the college football playoff and finally being able to get over the Ohio State hump? It makes all the sense in the world, because Minnesota Vikings are going to give him plenty of time to get that program turned around. And then you look at the landscape of the NFC North. It just seems like a landing spot where Jim Harbaugh would be able to get things fixed sooner rather than later.
Yeah, Chris, that the option to go back and do that because of what he's accomplished is a reminder. This has got to probably feel like the idea of this a shot to the pride if you're a Michigan fan. I know people are going to wrap it around different feelings, but Chris, we just went through this at Notre Dame, right? Brian Kelly, all-time winningest coach in the history of Notre Dame football based on wins, decides to leave for what he believes are greener pastures down at LSU. And if you get Jim Harbaugh, who's the best coach you've had since Lloyd Carr left town at Michigan, the most successful by almost any meaningful metric, leave town now to go back to the NFL, I got to imagine the sting is just as similar for, again, a guy you just described. They wanted to run out of town after last year.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough because now it's a matter of where you pivot from. And with Michigan having their signing day today, it's National Signing Day, and potentially hauling in a top 10 class, for Jim Harbaugh to bail on the program based on where they're at right now, it just seems like, okay, maybe we're not who we thought we were. And I think that's a perfect time for some self-examination and trying to see how you do business and trying to improve on how you treat your head coach and how you treat your football program moving forward, because not only do the players want to be shown the love in today's college football landscape, but also head coaches want to be shown the love. They want to feel like they're supported in a way where they have all the resources that it would take in order to win championships and have sustained success. And by Jim Harbaugh leaving Michigan now to go to the Minnesota Vikings, that will be a clear message that he didn't feel supported in that way. And so I think that's the perfect time for Michigan to do some self-scouting and examine exactly where we're at as a program and how we can do things better.
Kane Ingle Jr. here on ESPN Radio. That soul searching, I think, has to go on for a lot of programs right now, because modern college football has changed with the role of NIL, which we'll get to in a bit, as many head coaches have weighed in on that in advance of National Signing Day. I'm with you on most all of this for Jim Harbaugh. The one thing that I think will stick out about the Harbaugh tenure at Michigan, Chris, because so much of it was marred by them being slower to the transition to some of the offenses we've seen around modern college football. We saw the way that Ryan Day and Ohio State have out-athleted everyone in the Big Ten for years now, and it took Michigan a while for Josh Gattis, their offensive coordinator, to come over to be able to open this up. We did hear about Jim Harbaugh, the quarterback whisperer, and Chris, he never seemed to find the guy under center that they were fully comfortable with. I mean, various versions of John O'Korn, Shea Patterson, all the names that we saw under center there, and the ones that were supposed to get them over the hump, that never really fully lived up to what we thought or expected we'd get from the guy that at one point developed Andrew Luck out at Stanford.
Yeah, but since Andrew Luck, how Jim Harbaugh has handled quarterbacks has been clunky. You go back to the San Francisco situation with Alex Smith and Colin Kaepernick. That wasn't exactly perfect either. And there was a little bit of hesitancy to transition the offense from a more traditional pro-style outfit to more of an option style with a dual-threat quarterback under center. So I get it. You're not wrong in what you're saying. But throughout all of it, Jim Harbaugh has done high-level winning. You mentioned the double-digit win seasons that he's had, 4 out of 7, and being in bowls in 6 out of 7. So, I mean, the success has been there, and the only year that you point to where he had a losing season was impacted by the pandemic. So I don't look at it as an indictment on Jim Harbaugh, the coach. I think this is more of an indictment on the program and how they treated Jim Harbaugh over the last couple of years, which is why he has interest elsewhere. And so if you're Michigan – if you're forced to go into the hiring cycle and trying to find another head coach to replace Jim Harbaugh, you might want to think about how you handle that head coach, even in a lean year or a down year.
Yep.
Because that could have implications moving forward as to whether or not they're willing to commit to that program long term.
Yeah, I think the answer to your original question, I would look at Jim Harbaugh and say what he did at Michigan was successful in the way that we grade success in college football now. And the question going forward is going to be a lot more about, what is this program actually capable of on the top end? What does the ceiling start to look like for Michigan football in reality in 2022? We'll get to more of that as we wait to see Jim Harbaugh and the result of this interview with the Minnesota Vikings. Coming up next, though, let's get to some other quotes that we saw come out of the second National Signing Day in college football and the three letters on every coach's tongue. That's next here, Kane Ingle Jr. on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Kenny and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Kenny. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Hit us up on the CNG call-in line, 888-SAY-ESPN. That's 888-729-3776. And Gojo, we got some coaches on National Signing Day bellyaching, not about their recruiting classes, but about the NIL situation and trying to adjust to the way of the world and the current landscape of college football, and players trying to do their best to capitalize or monetize their athletic ability. And it's pretty prominent coaches too. We're not just talking about, you know, group of five schools. We're talking about some coaches that are heads of Power Five programs. And it seems really interesting and somewhat hypocritical for them to be going on the record and questioning or criticizing the handling of NIL by the NCAA.
Yeah, it's really incredible to watch, because on one side, you have got some of the established powers, like you mentioned, namely Nick Saban and Jimbo Fisher, having to address some of this stuff today, being agitated once again by Lane Kiffin at Ole Miss. So let's lay this out for everybody. This is the second National Signing Day. The first one, the early signing period, is in December. That's when the vast majority of these classes get signed. And since then, what we have seen is all this conversation around Texas A&M's recruiting class. By some ranking systems, the number one ranked class ever since we started tracking all of this.
And Based on that defensive tackle that they got, I could understand why it's the number one class ever.
terrifying.
He's a monster.
Terrifying. That is what Texas A&M's got coming. And there's been all these rumors that popped up about Texas A&M and the NIL money shelled out by boosters in excess of $30 million that Jimbo Fisher had to go on record today and refute, saying that this was something that came from a message board post from a poster named Sliced Bread. That is where we are in college sports. But you've got Jimbo Fisher coming out and saying, taking offense to that, saying that's an affront to the players and the decisions they made, the coaches and the work that they made. Chris, you've got Nick Saban coming out at Alabama taking issue with this, saying, quote, when we start using name, image, and likeness for a kid to come to our school, that's where I draw the line, because that's not why we did this. I hear crazy people on TV who say we're doing it above board. He said, quote, we never did it. We never did it. We never cheated to get a player. We never played players to come to our school. And then you've got our good old friend Lane Kiffin, who comes over here now and says, quote, we don't have the same funding resources that these schools do for NIL deals. It's basically dealing with different salary caps. Now we have a sport that has completely different salary caps, and some of these schools have whatever, 5 to 10 times what everyone else that they can pay players. I know nobody uses those phrases, but that's what it is. He even joked and he said, I quote, joked the other day, I didn't know if Texas A&M was going to incur a luxury tax in how much they paid for their signing classes. So while everyone wants to deny it as they benefit from it, Lane Kiffin's the one laying it bare right now, saying, now this is what we're dealing with. And in his mind, and in every one of their mind, Chris, they talk about it as a problem in a way I don't understand.
Well, here's the thing. It might not be a level playing field, but it's never been a level playing field for the players. And that's the part that I don't get when it comes to the coaches that are able to make millions off the backs of these young kids. And that's the part that's troubling to me in terms of them wanting to regulate NIL to some degree and not allow players to capitalize on their name, image, and likeness and the brand that they develop while they're at these institutions. The players don't get paid from the colleges, from the universities. They get paid from other entities, third parties, based on what they do on the field. But the revenue that they generate directly benefits the institutions that they play for. And so that's why I find it a little bit hypocritical when Lane Kiffin, Nick Saban, and others go on the record and talk about the difficulties in dealing with NIL and trying to rein some of these players in to fit the agenda of the team, as opposed to doing what's in their individual best interest for the dollars that are out there for NIL. So that's, I don't have any sympathy for any of these coaches, because this has gone on for decades where they've exploited these young men and they've dangled the carrot of tuition, room, and board as fair and equal payment for their services at these universities, when everybody understands that the value of the scholarship does not represent the true value of what these kids bring to the university. So the coaches can all the way miss me with all the complaints that they have. They've got an extra layer when it comes to the degree of difficulty with their job, but that's just what it is right now. I'm sure they can cry themselves a river with the millions of dollars that they're getting paid for being head coaches at these schools.
Yeah, and again, this is one of those situations with Nick Saban. I look at this like when Bill Belichick talks foul about analytics. Believe only some of it here, because we know Bill Belichick was quietly one of the coaches making use of that earlier than most. And for Nick Saban, who last year lauded what his quarterback Bryce Young had made in NIL endorsements before he had even taken a snap, and has used the transfer portal to bring in some of the best talented players like Jameson Williams, their star wide receiver, who's going to be a stud in the NFL draft, it's a reminder that these coaches do have more on their plate now because of this. And so I think we're going to hear that reflected in the way they talk about it. But Chris, the bottom line is just that. There's not going to be much sympathy for them because of what those coaches are paid. What's going to be interesting with the transfer portal and everything else is if they do start to take a look at the NFL model, say that like recruiting, there might be dead periods. There might be areas where what has become pseudo free agency has its time, is sanctioned for that window, and then is blocked off for certain portions maybe during the season. All of these are going to be things that happen naturally over time, because this is all supposed to be the free market that regulates itself naturally over time. So congratulations to all of these signing classes here, and a bigger congratulations to all these kids that I hope are getting dumb paid off these NIL deals once they get to campus. Go and get that money, young fellas. Go and get that money. Coming up next, we will head back to the NFL and take a look at Brian Flores, the lawsuit that is at the center of the NFL universe, next on ESPN Radio.
Thanks for listening to Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast. You can check the guys out live weekday afternoons at 4 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN+.